You're listening to The Point. November is Native American Heritage Month. In our region, we have a number of opportunities to learn more about the history, culture, and art of the Wampanoag people. Joining us to talk about them is Paula Peters, member of the Mashpee Wampanoag Tribe and author of Mashpee 9, A Story of Cultural Justice. Paula, welcome back.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You bet. So art and craft are integral to the lives of Indigenous people. Historically, recognition of Native American art and artisans have been limited outside of Native communities. How is that changing, and what are some of the reasons you think Native artists are finally being recognized?
Well, there was a law that was passed that protects Native art, and I believe that was back in the 90s. I'm not going to know exactly, but you know, it inspires the artisans to feel, I think, a little bit more emboldened and free to share their work. That, you know, that they typically what they don't want is to see cultural appropriation. And there have been obviously big designers like Donna Karan and others that have appropriated Native design and tried to make it their own. And there's been a lot of noise about that, you know, just basically just cut it out. So one of the best ways we can do that is to really own our art. And at the Native American, at the Wampanoag Trading Post, we certify that everything that we're selling is Native art, and we know who the artisans are, and they're getting authentic Native art.
Yeah. So give us a sense of the breadth and depth of Native artists in our region.
Yeah, we have so many. And, you know, some people are surprised when they come into our shop and they see some works that are really contemporary Native art. And, you know, they're looking for something stereotypical, but they quickly come around when they see how beautiful some of these pieces are. We have paintings in acrylic, huge canvases that are done by a relatively new tribal artist, Natasha Fry, who's being featured in our gallery extension. We have jewelry. The wampum jewelry that we sell in our shop is all authentically made wampum jewelry, mostly by Wampanoags, but some by other Native American artisans. And we also have books and music. In your previous segment, you were talking about Emma Jo and her Breath of Prayers series of CDs. We carry those. We carry Emma Jo's felted wool art. So it goes really the gamut from books to music to paintings.
Yeah. You mentioned wampum, and listeners may have seen jewelry labeled as wampum in local shops. Can you tell us the definition of wampum and what was the significance of it for Native people before Europeans arrived in North America?
Sure. You know, wampum is something that is of a particular value to Indigenous people. It's something that we wear as adornment. And also was used as a method of communicating our values and our stories, really, in the form of wampum belts. And when I say wampum belt, I don't mean something that you put around your waist and strap on. It's really just a long strand of woven wampum. And in the wampum belts, there would often be symbols that might have been inspired by stories of the community, and in that way are very historical to us. And sometimes wampum belts contained messages that solidified a treaty with another tribe or another group of people. And as that value was recognized by colonists and traders and fishermen who came along, it was considered a currency for them. But it was never really currency in our tradition. But because the European traders needed something to monetize the trade that they made with the Indigenous people, that's one of the things that they did.
Yeah. Yeah. Last week's local food report was about the prevalence of local quahogs with little or no purple color in their shells. And Elspeth Hay talked with Chucky Green about why the quahogs have less purple than they did decades ago. There are only theories at this point. We don't know for certain what's causing the change. Has it been difficult for Native artists to find enough purple wampum for their work?
Well, it has been more challenging. And the artisans, some of them are very particular about the places that they go. When we were producing the Wampum Belt project last year that is currently on display in the UK, our artisans each knew of their particular places to go in certain bays and find the shells that had the most wampum or the most of the purple color. But it was a bit more challenging. So it, yeah. And that's something that I have a sad 7-year-old. Okay, we can continue.
Happens when we're working at home.
Really? I thought that was over.
Yeah. So, Paulo, the Mashpee Wampanoag has put a lot of effort into preserving the culture and the language of the tribe. How is this impacting the next generation of tribal members?
You know, I think it's always something that has to be, you know, put in front of them and modeled for them. I remember being, you know, a young girl having to learn how to dance at powwow. And my mom, Shirley Peters, who a lot of people on the Cape know, and Jessie, Little Doe's mom, who was Loretta Jones, they would bring all of us young girls together and have us dance around the dining room table and show us their steps. And we giggled and laughed, you know, like, aren't our mothers so silly? But I'm incredibly grateful for those silly days and terribly miss those ladies. But, you know, now it's our job to do that. COVID has really kind of put a damper on that, because the kinds of things that we did every season, I mean, we would start in January right after Christmas, and we'd have drumming socials and bring the children out and make regalia with them. And we haven't been able to come together to do that, which is a big part of our tradition. But I think a lot of people are doing it at home anyway, with the hope that we won't miss another annual powwow. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the children are very, they're very receptive of these ideas, and, you know, because they grow up in it. And as long as we continue to provide that environment, whether they think it's initially silly or not, it's the foundation of our culture.
Yeah, I think you mentioned that people would be surprised about some of the artwork at the Wampanoag Trading Post and Gallery, and you talk about some of the contemporary pieces. So how are young and emerging artists contemporizing traditional Native arts, and what can we learn about their experiences as Native people from their work?
That's a great question, and I think that you know, in particular, we have a gallery extension that has the Commons has offered us a space, in particular because it is Native American Heritage Month and they wanted to expand some of the work we're showing. And we have the works of two artists, Robert Peters, who I think you've probably talked to before, who's my brother, and he's more of an established contemporary artist, and then Natasha Fry, who has these huge canvases of really beautiful work that, you know, you just have to see to believe. It's all inspired by her powwow experience. And Robert's pieces are more inspired by his, you know, inward spiritual beliefs. And it sort of comes out in these caricatures and vivid colors. The works complement each other absolutely beautifully if you have a chance to get in there. The extension is at number 5 North Street, just a few doors down from our shop, which is at 20 North Street in the Mashpee Commons. But there's a good look at contemporary work from two perspectives, from, you know, a very spiritual perspective on my brother's side, and the abstract work, the colors in Natasha's work are just amazing. And it's just, you get a feeling when you walk into that great space of, you know, some real traditional value. And it's a big space, so we've been glad when people can get in there because you can social distance very easily. Yeah. And we try to leave the door open so there's, you know, lots of air coming in and out. But it's a very large space.
Yeah. In the few minutes we have left, I want to make sure we get to this. You have a couple of events planned for this Friday and Sunday. Tell us about those.
Right. So on Friday evening, we try on the last Friday of the month, or we have up to this point, had sort of a gallery night and invited our artisans to come and meet with people. Mostly it was an outdoor event, but with this big space, we can actually invite them to come inside. There will be live music. Maalim and the Groovalados are planning to come and play.
I love that name, the Groovalados. That's a great name.
Yes, the Groovalados. They will be there. And on Sunday at 4 p.m., we will be screening the Mashpee 9 film and have a little talk back afterwards.
Yeah. And we should mention you had some films that you'd offered earlier this month. And I'm wondering, you know, those have happened already. Do you expect those films to be offered again, especially once we get through the pandemic and people are more comfortable heading out for films?
Oh, I absolutely hope so, because we did. We screened a film called Gather, and Seed was also screened. Seed is about, you know, recovering indigenous seeds and the food sovereignty project and how that actually helps us to recover our traditions and our culture. I think both films actually speak to that. So we'd love to be able to continue that. You know, it gets infinitely more difficult as we still see COVID numbers rising. Right. And I don't know what to anticipate in the coming months, but, you know, we all want to be extra careful. I don't want anything that we do to put people at risk.
Of course. And you mentioned that Mashpee 9 will be shown on Sunday. We should tell people that's a documentary about an incident of cultural injustice in the tribe in 1976. Do you want to say anything about that right. in our last minute or so?
Sure. You know, we debuted that film back in 2016, which was the 40th anniversary of the event. And we were able to actually speak with most of the men who were brutally arrested in that event back in 1976 and really get them to talk about not only what happened to them, but to put that whole event into the context of what was happening to Mashpee at the time. Mm-hmm. And we've had people on all sides of the issue have seen it and really feel like they've learned a great deal about, you know, how to move forward, which is, you know, what we would hope would happen. And I do want to mention too, there's seating for 25 people because that is such a big space. We've never maxed out, and so I would just say if someone's interested in coming, that they should arrive early and hopefully get a seat.
Yeah, and we will post links with more information about the Wampanoag Trading Post events at the gallery and on our website, capeendislands.org. Paula Peters, thanks so much for taking time to be with us.
Hey, thank you.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.